Hello, and welcome to the Investec conference call weekly economic Q&A. My name is Molly, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. For the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, at the end of the presentation, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions anonymously. This can be done by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. Please note the contents of this call is not for wider media circulation. It also does not constitute financial advice. I will now hand you over to your host, Victoria Clark, to begin today's call. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's great pleasure to be back on the call today. So I'm Victoria from the economics team. Some of you might have heard me before on some of these calls. And I had the pleasure this morning of being joined by Kate Calvert, who heads up our top-rated research team. She's been at Investec for nearly 7 years, and she has a huge 30 years experience working in or analysing the retail industry. So it's really great to have her on the call today, particularly given the evolution that we're starting to see in the reopening of the retail sector. So we will get Kate's thoughts on that very shortly, and I'm sure she's got lots of really interesting insights on how that's going to work and some of the risks and challenges there. But as we've done before, I'll start with an update on the economy and markets before heading to Kate. And then at the end, as Molly says, we'll have time for question and answer. So to begin with the economic developments, the broad view is still one in which, after having had a contraction in a first quarter GDP of about 2%, we are still looking set for this very steep, nearly 30% drop in GDP in the second quarter, and then a bounce back as more activity starts to come online. And as I'm sure I and many of my colleagues have said over recent weeks, this doesn't mean that the economy is back to the size it was before the coronavirus came about straight away, but it will feel like a sizable rebound because we'll be coming back from such low levels. And our latest kind of annual GDP numbers are still looking for a little bit more than 10% drop in GDP over this year, and then a nearly 10% recovery next year. And as we've been talking about, we're kind of terming that this lopsided V-shaped recovery. So not a U-shape where the economy is kind of bumping along the bottom for quite a long time, but it's not this bounce back where we dropped off and then the economy kind of grows and returns to exactly where it was before. Because, you know, as you can see, if you walk down the high streets already, speak to people, you know, there are already some implications of the virus and the disruption that it's caused that are going to last much longer than the restrictions and the turnaround in those. But that's still very much our broad picture. And as I think Philip spoke about last week, that is not, you know, at odds particularly with the sorts of messages that we're hearing from the central bank. They are also in the position of talking about this kind of lopsided V-shaped recovery. It's still very much the restrictions that are driving what's happening in terms of the economic numbers. So this week, as I mentioned at the open, is an important one because we're seeing a further easing in restrictions, you know, a partial return to schooling, people allowed outdoors in England in groups of up to six, outdoor markets back. And then there's more to come from the 15th of June when some of the non-essential retail is back, and then more in July, hopefully, if the government confirms those plans, such as, you know, with restaurants and hotels. So we're seeing this kind of partial phase easing, which is bringing with it more and more of a resumption of economic activity, but nothing that yet feels very much like normal because obviously it's all being done in this new world of social distancing. And with that, there's still many questions about what's going to happen in terms of consumer confidence. Will all this sort of saving data that's coming through that shows people are saving quite a lot, at least on aggregate, obviously that won't apply to everybody. Will that lead to a bit of a spending boom to come in the quarters ahead, or does higher unemployment potentially become the overriding factor? So these are the sorts of kind of questions that as we move through the next few weeks and next months, we'll start to get a better sense of. Now, the the official data that we've got, the kind of Office for National Statistics numbers, are still telling us what was happening, either in the very early period in the lockdown or even in some cases prior to that. So there is limited use. Philip talked about the retail sales figures last week and the horrible nature of those, and I think Kate will no doubt touch on those a bit more. But it's, you know, it's these anecdotal indications of how the economy is performing that are much more interesting and relevant right now. One of the more official, but certainly not produced by the Statistics Office surveys that we watch pretty closely, because it gives one of the earliest steers on how the economy is doing, is the PMI. And that, if it's above 50, suggests the economy is expanding relative to the prior month. And if it's below 50, then it's contracting, and that 50 is the break-even point. And the UK composite PMI rose about 10 points in May, but it was still well below that 50 break-even level. So even though it's risen, it's still suggesting that the economy was contracting more in May than it was in April. So, you know, positive signals within a still fairly, well, extremely gloomy message. But, you know, if you look beyond that information in the indirect metrics, which are telling us how those restrictions are impacting economic activity, there are signs of things getting back a bit more to normal. So car travel, for example, is back at about 60% of pre-COVID-19 disrupted levels. It's slow. It was about 25% of those levels. So quite a big recovery coming through there. Similarly, in heavy goods vehicles, they're above 80% of the kind of pre-COVID. Up back to about 80% of the pre-COVID levels, and light goods about 75%. So those travel numbers are really starting to show that, at least on the roads, things are getting back a bit closer to normal. But public transport, I mean, not surprisingly, still very, very depressed. And National Rail still at about 10% of where it was pre-COVID disruption. So it is still a very partial picture. But it's those sorts of metrics that are telling us, as the government's easing things, that rebound that we're talking about, that recovery that we do expect to see, you know, is seemingly coming through. And if we look to the continent, where the reopening is further forward, there are more signs of activity there. So Germany is interesting. They one thing we've looked at there is the open table restaurant reservations, and that's really recovered quite markedly, actually. I think when I looked at it last, it was about 80% of its pre-COVID levels, so getting you know, quite a lot back to normal. And, you know, bearing in mind that you still got restrictions in place as to how close you can get to people in a restaurant, that's quite interesting, really, the extent to which the recovery is starting to emerge there. But as I say, we've got this critical week this week, perhaps another very important phase to come at the start of July. And Kate's going to talk to us more about what that might look and feel like for the retail sector. Now, you know, a number of dynamics absolutely significant in determining what that rebound looks like, how strong it is, when exactly it comes. And obviously one key factor is whether we get a second wave. Now, I think one thing that's been interesting in the last week has just been that question over whether the daily death numbers are starting to plateau rather than falling. There's still quite a bit of noise in the medical metrics, but I think that's worth watching pretty closely, because if the scientists and the government do get very jittery that that's not continuing to come back, and perhaps the reinfection rate does tick up as these reopenings move forward, that would present a further downside, really, to our view of how the recovery comes through. But again, you know, looking overseas, that it has in the main been managed pretty well. And China's an interesting case, because it's obviously been dealing with these issues for a lot longer than us, and even further forward than Germany. And we had a services indicator overnight, which actually moved back to its highest since 2010. So really suggesting that if you manage the risk of reinfection very well, and you manage the reopening very well, that there are some, you know, some sizable rebounds, some sizable gains to be had. In the UK, a lot's being pinned on this track and trace system, which Boris Johnson's announced on the 28th of May. It's actually called Test and Trace, not Track and Trace. But it's been launched now. Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales have got their own systems started or starting soon. And that will be absolutely critical. If that runs well, then the government is likely to feel more confident in moving forward with a wider reopening of bits of the rest of the economy and perhaps bringing more people through to schools as well. So I think that will be another critical aspect to watch. In addition, what we've talked about for a long time is developments on vaccines and treatments. Things to mention that have happened in the last week that I think are pretty interesting. South Korean company Celltrion has said this week that its experimental COVID-19 treatment demonstrated an up to 100-fold viral load reduction in animal trials. It's going to have human trials in July, and that looks promising, certainly if that carries through what they saw in the animal trials through to the human trials. You've got Russia also saying it's starting to administer game-changer antiviral drugs. And obviously lots more chat about remdesivir as well. So these evolutions here will be important. I think this is the week that we have the UK Global Vaccine Summit as well. So if we do see a big leap forward on that front or leap back, that is going to be absolutely critical in the extent of the reopening and the easing back in restrictions that we can see. The scarring and is the key factor in terms of the longer term implications and whether that level of GDP takes a lot longer to return to where it was pre-crisis or whether, it can snap back perhaps even, by the end of next year or probably more likely in 2022. And the government has put this enormous package of response measures in place. And one of the key planks of that has been the coronavirus job retention scheme. And it's in this position really where it wants that in place because with that safety net, it can hopefully limit those that are pushed onto unemployment and therefore left in that pool for much longer. But it doesn't want it to be so widespread and long lasting that it can't afford the fiscal costs and perhaps encourages people to stay in there longer than they should, because that might also have scarring implications. So we've got the government, particularly the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, really trying very carefully to balance this out and work out what the right position to be is, to be in is. And he made some changes to that at the end of last week, which seemed to be aimed towards phasing that out. So, particularly last week, he was saying that employers will be asked to pay 10% of furloughed workers' wages in September, rising to 20% in October, and you had the extension through to the end of October earlier in May. So it's there still as the safety net, but it's becoming less generous and hopefully phasing people off so that ideally the economy can pick up where it left off. And this is an extremely generous scheme. I'm not necessarily the most outstandingly generous, but certainly in terms of what we've seen internationally, it's a very big safety net. So in theory, this should support the kind of recovery and the ability for large chunks of the economy to snap back. But it's interesting, as I say, walking around talking to people, the extent to which businesses have already been affected, and there will therefore be some restructuring through the economy that follows. Two final points. One is the budget. It looks as if there's going to be another one the week of the 6th of July. The Chancellor is expected to give a budget statement, and I think Johnson's going to give a big speech at the end of June. So what comes out in that budget, the extent of the support that's in there, and as I say, how well it appears the government's managing that phase out of many of these big support measures will be absolutely critical in whether they can get this kind of snapback in growth that they're hoping for. That's very important. The other thing is obviously a lot of talk of what Bank of England's going to do. Will they move into negative territory for interest rates? Philip spoke quite a lot about this last week, so I won't go through all the ground that was covered. But needless to say, that kind of debate over negative rates is continuing, particularly given that the Bank of England continues to look at the issue. Our feeling is that the Bank of England probably won't go there with negative rates, but it's certainly looking at it seriously, and lots of central banks across the globe looking very closely at the evidence base. There's other things they can do in short that I think, if you're looking at the risks of taking action against the benefits are probably going to deliver them a better payoff. And that might include an expansion of QE, which we think they'll do probably in later this month, and also another action on their TFSME scheme. So there are other things that they can do. Wouldn't rule it out, therefore, but not our best guess. And then a few final points. So Brexit, Dominic Cummings and the whole saga over where he's been and what he's been up to has been dominating the news. But it does have implications for Brexit, because if he is quiet and a little bit in the debate, that might shift things in the direction of perhaps a transition extension becoming more likely, and perhaps even a softer negotiating line more generally. And I think broadly, you know, certainly if you look at Sterling this week, that seems to be the mood that things are going in. The Sun was reporting at the weekend that the UK is pulling the rug from under the planned June summit to have this stock take on Brexit talks, and basically has written this up as, well, there's no longer a June deadline to decide on the Brexit transition extension, that's now pushed through to September. Obviously, that hasn't formally happened, and you've had various officials pushing back on that. But it does, I think the main message is that it does appear that the government is now perhaps taking a slightly softer line on Brexit and more willing to consider this transition extension and a broader set of options and run these talks for longer. So, as I say, that's been significant for Sterling. Sterling's traded in a pretty small range in May, but it's made some sizable gains at the start of this week. Actually moved up to the high since late April, I think. And this morning, the pound was trading about 125.85 against the US dollar. Actually went to 88.7 pence earlier this week against the euro. So it really is making some quite significant gains. On sentiment, that's been interesting as well. Just really to note, for equity markets, the extent of the recoveries that we're seeing come through there. So the S&P 500 in the United States is back to close to 8% off its highs. You know, given where we are in the economic position, that's quite remarkable. It's basically been finding support on floors being found in economic data, economies reopening, and getting extra gains every time there's some sizable news on vaccines and treatments. But, you know, it is quite significant the extent to which that recovery has now come through. And certainly if the data confirms that that's the right direction, that that's the right reading of the economy's path forward, then that will reinforce that. And obviously if we get some significant news that suggested, say, a second wave or another shift back from the reopening, then that will have implications for that recovery that we've seen. So look, before I hand over to Kate, just in conclusion, really, look, the official data is going to continue to look horrible, but it's telling us what has been. And we are now very focused on these wider metrics, looking at transportation volumes, electricity, etc. And as we go forward, the monthly GDP figures, which are going to tell us on a nice monthly basis how the economy is shifting month to month, and therefore the extent of the rebound that's coming. And as I say, we think that that's going to start to look robust as these reopenings get more and more significant, given that we're coming from such very low levels. But it's not a resumption of business as usual by any stretch of the imagination. The government's got a lot more work to do. The July budget, I think, is going to be really interesting, really important, given what happens. What Rishi Sunak announced by way of unwinding the scheme is going to be key to the extent to which these longer term implications persist. Do we see longer term, you know, higher unemployment scarring through the economy? And as, you know, as the Fed chair Jerome Powell says, the medical statistics are still the one key metric to watch. You know, they are telling us whether there's going to be an increase in cases, whether that will therefore lead to more restrictions perhaps, and obviously the vaccines and the treatments are very significant in what reopening can happen. So that remains our main message. We are at the mercy of the medical data and the evolution of the science on the vaccines. I think that's probably a good place to hand over to Kate and hear what I'm sure is going to be a very interesting run through of developments on the retail front.
Thank you very much, Vicky. Right, I'm going to cover off the current state of the retail sector, the challenges of reopening stores, and some thoughts going into next year. I mean, it certainly has been a challenging couple of months for the industry, regardless of whether you've been lucky enough to be designated as an essential retailer and been able to trade during lockdown, or whether you've seen your physical business literally stop overnight. If you go back to April's ONS data, and I know Vicky said very much it's very backward-looking, but it has shown that there's been a massive wide divergence in performance depending on the type of business model you are. Obviously, online has massively outperformed, and the data suggested it was up 23% at that point. And it also has very much depended on the focus of your business in terms of the products you sell. So while overall retail sales were down 19% that month, food was up 5.8% and non-food was down 38%. The worst sector impacted was clothing, which was down 70%, and big ticket items like furniture and cars were also pretty bad. I think the anecdotal chat from the retailers does suggest that sales have picked up as lockdown has continued, and the exit rate should be much better than April's data suggests. So I would be expecting slightly better, or should I say less ugly, numbers coming when the next month's data comes out. Certainly the consumers have become more confident, and online shopping has really picked up. And also the retailers have got much better in terms of improving the delivery for the online shopping. In terms of the short-term winners, it has certainly been the infrastructure players like Amazon and Argos, the food retailers naturally, discounters have done well, as has DIY and electrical, and actually anything sort of fitness and kids related as well. However, as the recent results certainly from the food retailers and M&S has shown, you know, no one has made any money out of this in terms of any increased demand that their businesses may have seen over the last 9 weeks. The cost of supplying PPE, paying staff a bonus, and implementing social distancing has been huge. As COVID hits, I mean, I think the first priority for most businesses has been to increase the financial liquidity and preserve cash by severe cost cutting and taking the axe to the capital expenditure program. They have also looked to increase liquidity via increasing their debt facilities. Seven companies have had and have raised capital via the equity markets. Some have done sell and leaseback deals on their head offices and distribution centres. The people who have really taken the pain have been landlords and also suppliers. As British Land very much said the other day, it had only collected just over 40% of the end of March's quarterly rent. I think if it wasn't for the government's business rate holiday, the job retention scheme, and also the various loan schemes on offer, we would have seen a lot more retailers go into administration in the first 6 weeks, as particularly as the working capital unwound. And some of those could have been pretty high quality ones. But as it is, plenty of household names have gone into administration, like Debenhams, Bright House, Laura Ashley, Oasis, Warehouse. Though it is fair to point out that many of these have been struggling for a while, with the common theme tending to be high leverage and weak market positions. Certainly this time round, the retail sector was in much better, less geared position than it was for the financial crisis. I think the other steep learning curve that all retailers have gone through is they've effectively had to become online retailers overnight. Many have seen their online businesses double, and costs have shot up as a result of the necessity of putting in social distancing measures, but also in terms of dealing with much higher volumes. So investment has been needed in warehousing and in distribution. As one finance director said to me, we have had to gear up to do a Black Friday every day of the year. So within food retail, you have definitely seen online participation double, and there's been a lot in the press, obviously, about the amount of extra capacity there. And non-food has definitely gone from sort of high 20s penetration to over 30% penetration. I would say at the moment, the industry is very much kind of in phase two of survival, and is now turning to future planning and how to reopen its stores. And this certainly will bring its own challenges. As Vicky has already mentioned, retailers will start to reopen on June the 15th in England, with late June being the sort of anticipated date for stores to be able to open in Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. ironically, is going to be those retailers which have higher sales density than smaller stores which will face the most challenges. And certainly the return to more normalized trading levels will be a gradual process over the coming months, depending on how government advice changes and how well the virus is controlled. Most retailers are probably looking for their store sales to be sort of 40 to 60% below normal levels for the next couple of months post-earning. I think the unknown is how much of consumer spending stays online. But the industry, I think, is very unlikely to return back to previous levels of penetration. So I think we have taken a significant step forward and shift online. I mean, I think after all, just sort of chatting around, how many of your parents or friends' parents have embraced online shopping, virtual yoga, and online quiz nights? So looking at some of the practical issues of opening and reopening, the first thing is how to implement the 2-meter social distancing rules so you can ensure that your staff and customers are safe. Unfortunately, not all stores are the same shape and size, and so retailers are having to look at different ways of implementing this. Some are doing one-way systems, some are relaying their stores. There's going to be limits on number of people in stores. Some retailers are cutting back their product range just to the best sellers. And also, the retailers are having to be very active in terms of sourcing PPE. They've got to think about stepping up their cleaning, and they've got to retrain their staff on how to implement the new social distancing rules. In terms of the clothing retailers, one of the first priorities has to be liquidating the huge amount of excess stock there is in the market. The timing of the pandemic is such that the sector effectively lost its whole summer and spring selling window. So the heavy discounting has already started, and we saw that this morning in the BRC shop price index. And the bloodbath is certainly expected over the summer and into the autumn. Some retailers, such as Marks & Spencer's, Next and Primark, are looking at hibernating stock into next year. But this also comes at a cost and certainly will mean that it will take probably 18 months before the clothing area industry gets its stock levels back to normal. I think the biggest challenge is going to be matching costs with sales as we go forward. And here, I think everyone has turned to the crystal ball. You know, whatever your sales plan is and whatever's plan you're running your business to at the moment, you can absolutely guarantee that it's going to be wrong. So managements will need to stay focused on cash generation. You certainly have no idea at the moment how quickly sales will come back, because there will be some nervousness with people coming back onto the high street. And, you know, you have to try and judge how to bring back your staff from furlough, because you don't want to bring them back too early. Certainly, the part-time furlough scheme will help to flex the cost base shorter term, and the extension of furlough, albeit at lower levels, out to the end of October should massively help retailers rebalance their costs with sales. And certainly, I'd say the scheme has probably exceeded quite a few of those retailers' expectations in terms of generosity. So we expect most retailers to do a phased reopening of their stores. They're not going to open every store, day one. And this would be partly to test their COVID protocols, but also to take advantage of June's and July's more generous furlough payments before it starts to taper off. And I think also to see where footfall comes back. We would expect more local high streets to benefit first, and retail parks, rather than the shopping centres, and certainly that seems to have been the experience in Europe. Rather interestingly, actually, in the States, it's been the shopping centres that have come back more strongly, but then again, they're slightly more geared up that way, and they do have lots of space out there. We would certainly also not be surprised if some retailers do not reopen, and we may hear of more players going into administration. So I think the third stage of survival will be at the end of October, when the job retention scheme finishes. The timing for this is far from ideal, to be honest, for retail. I mean, you will have just have had September's quarterly rent payment at the end of September, which is when people forward pay their rent for the next 3 months. around September and October also is typically peak working capital for retailers, as most of the stock levels are at their highest ahead of the key important Christmas trading period. So from September, retailers will need to think about staffing levels, and we would expect unemployment to start to shoot up more widely, and particularly more widely across the whole economy. And that could also temper retail spending as well. I think this is also the time when the medical profession is planning for a possible second wave. So let's hope there isn't a perfect storm. From a demand perspective, I mean, there will be pent-up demand when stores first reopen, albeit this will be offset by lower capacity throughput due to social distancing. We would expect those categories that have done relatively well through the lockdown to continue to be quite strong for the rest of the year. Many consumers are still likely to be working at home. They're going to be continuing to spend a lot of time at home, and the kids still need entertaining. They also, as Vicky said, have a lot more cash probably if they're lucky to be in employment at the moment. If you consider the fact that leisure activities, pubs and restaurants, which typically account for just over 20% of household expenditure, they're still shut for at least another month. So some of that expenditure is bound to have switched into retail. And also for those households which are still in work and all furloughed, at the moment they are currently saving, and you know that has been the experience in the States, and Vicky has already alluded to that. I think people not going on holiday will also help short-term household cash flow. So realistically, I think the consumer is in pretty good shape at the moment and probably in quite a good position for the next couple of months. The pricing environment out there is also expected to be a lot more aggressive, so there will be some bargains to go after. And I do think that will help keep the lid, certainly, on inflation. I think most retailers are hoping that the UK will move to the 1 metre social distancing by December. Otherwise, Christmas trading may struggle a little bit. I think moving into next year and some considerations for that, we still expect retail to face a tricky demand environment. I mean, from the consumer demand perspective, we do believe that much higher unemployment will mean that there's less to spend on non-food categories in particular, as we would also expect people to want to break out and prioritise going out, leisure and experiences again after the year they've just had. Also, I think if you've disproportionately spent on your home, garden and home working equipment, or you bought a new bike in lockdown or over this summer, you are less likely to repeat that purchase next year. I also think that big ticket will continue to struggle. I think one also needs to consider that the government at some point will need to get its money back, and this may mean higher personal taxation. Low interest rates and no dividends can't be great news as far as the silver pound is concerned. I think luckily we have people like Vicky, Phil and the team to help guide us through trying to answer some of these questions and the impact that that could well have on consumer spending. From a corporate perspective, it certainly will be interesting what the government does on the national living wage. Will it stick to its previous plans and look to increase it by over 5% per annum, which is tended to be the run rate? What will happen to business rates will also be another question of interest when the 12-month holiday ends in March. I mean, there's been calls for many a year that it is an outdated tax and needs reforming. There is also potential at the moment for an inflationary headwind from FX. Sterling dollar is the key currency from a sourcing perspective for many of these retailers. Most retailers are currently hedged at around the 130 level or slightly above. Though I do think that if FX does stay around where it is at the moment, I suspect there's a lot that retailers can do to mitigate this via tougher supply negotiations, as there's bound to be quite a lot of surplus capacity out there, given what's happened globally. And dare I say, what will happen to trade talks and Brexit, because that could also have implications in terms of the sector. So I think, in summary, you know, a challenging retail environment is nothing new for the industry. It's something it's been experiencing over the last few years. The focus for many people has to be on creating as much agility in its business models as possible. We will certainly have seen a much bigger structural shift online, And those sort of structural trends that we've seen over the last couple of years in terms of fewer stores, declining wholesale channel, an increase in partnerships between businesses, and a continuation of market consolidation, they are bound to have accelerated under lockdown. But I think it's worth not writing off the retail sector altogether. I mean, certainly in these moments of crisis, the strong tend to get stronger. I certainly disagree with those who say that retail will have changed forever as a result of this pandemic. As far as I'm concerned, the attributes that make a successful retailer have stood the test of time. Key very much is understanding your customer, staying relevant, and create as differentiated and inspiring offer as possible. What has changed is the method of delivery and how demanding customers have become. So I think that really sort of concludes my thoughts on the sector. I'm back.
Brilliant. Well, I think we're heading to question and answers now. Molly, can you introduce that process for us?
Of course. If you would like to ask a question anonymously, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. I'll then be able to connect to you directly, assign you a caller number, and then you will be prompted when to ask your question. Before you go ahead with your question, please state who your question is for. Caller number 1, please go ahead with your question.
Hi there. I've actually got a couple of questions, please. My first question is for Kate. You mentioned in your presentation the UK government is looking at reducing social distancing from 2 metres to 1 metre. If that happened, what would be the impact on retailers? Which bits of retail in particular will predominantly benefit? And then my second question is for Victoria. I'd like to ask about the recent riots across the US. The US was in the process of reopening and its economy was picking up. How much do you see this hitting the US's recovery from the coronavirus? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, I'll pick up the first question. In terms of the move to 1 metre, I mean, that would be incredibly helpful as far as retail is concerned and handling volume of trade. It would be particularly useful for smaller store retailers, as well as those who have much higher sales densities. I think the key thing for the sector now is it's got to deliver Christmas. I mean, this is certainly a vital time in terms of the annual profit generation of the sector, and is a real pinch point is likely to be in December. So if you could move to the 1 metre, I mean, I think a lot of retailers are indicating that it probably wouldn't impact their ability to be able to trade over Christmas, and they could probably maximise the sales that there are by doing that. I mean, certainly also those retailers who tend to be most reliant on the final weeks of December are very much currently looking at technology solutions in terms of queue busting and investing there to help them be able to move people through stores as quickly as possible. So, yes, it would definitely be quite beneficial as we go into the key trading period.
I think the other question was for me, Victoria. So it was with regards to the impact that the protests and rioting that we're seeing in the United States right now might affect their recovery from coronavirus. And I mean, the timing of this is unfortunate, because it's coming at a point when it appears as if, you know, many of these states were ready, you know, in the early phases of their reopening. And as I said in the economic overview, it's those easing restrictions that's been really driving the recovery in a lot of those indirect activity indices. So, you know, it's early days. Equity market is clearly off the view that those easing restrictions and resumption in economic activity, you know, will continue and that will pick up. But obviously, you know, these events certainly over the last 2 years, have shown that we can never be complacent in the way that things are going to be unfold. So like everybody else, we're watching to see whether this continues, whether, you know, further measures need to be in place. Obviously, President Trump's talked about even deploying the military to try and contain the extent of the disruption. And we've had curfews going into place. So those will obviously have further implications on the extent to which people can get out and about. So, I mean, I think in short, if this becomes a relatively short-lived event and it doesn't impact significantly, you know, for a long term, the extent of the rebound and the recovery that we start to see, then the impact could be very limited. But obviously, we do need to see now how this unfolds. And if it does lead to restrictions on top of restrictions, I mean, that really will limits the extent of the recovery that we can expect from the US. And that will matter because, you know, the US has been one of the areas where we've seen a slightly lesser economic hit than we have been expecting to see in the UK and on the continent. So, you know, it is important. But, we really do need to wait to see what the next few days and weeks brings and whether that does impede President Trump and governors at a state level in continuing to press forward with the unlocking and the reopening of stores. Molly, are there any other further questions on the line at all?
We don't have any questions coming through just yet. As another reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypads. Thank you. We have no questions coming through, so I'll hand the call back over to you, Victoria, for any closing remarks.
Thank you very much. So huge thank you to everybody who's joined us this week. It's been fantastic having Kate on the line to give us her insights on the retail sector as we enter a pretty critical period. And we're all listening carefully to what she has to say in terms of informing the extent to which that will be managed. And, you know, for us as an economics team, gauging the extent of the consumer response, because that is absolutely critical with that about 80% of the UK economy. So it's been really insightful. Now, just a point of housekeeping for those of you that are regular listeners to our call, there is not going to be a call next week and we are changing format slightly. So if you keep an eye on your emails, there'll be some further information coming around on how you can join these calls going forward. So do keep an eye on those. If you've got any questions in the meantime, feel free to get in touch. And we hope to speak to you again very soon. So thanks again, everybody, for joining us.
Very much.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect your lines. Hosts, please stay connected.